This episode of the React Podcast is brought to you by reacttraining.com. In-person, hands-on training for development teams from React community leaders and experts. Visit reacttraining.com to learn more. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the React Podcast. I am your host, Michael Jackson, and I'm here with my co-host, Michael Chan.
How's it going, everybody?
And we have a very special guest for you today, Miss Sarah Vieira.
Hello, everyone.
Sarah is joining us from Portugal.
Yes.
Whereabouts in Portugal?
I live in a very small town near Porto. I've actually usually joke about this in conferences that my town has less people than the Apollo Slack.
So that puts you in what? I mean, Apollo Slack has probably got a couple thousand. So yeah,
we have 5K people about that.
Oh really?
Yeah. So Paul, yeah.
Wow.
Apollo Slack has about 6,000.
Wow, that's awesome. Like, is it?
We have
a,
one ATM. Yeah, it's cool.
Is Do you have any traffic lights?
No, and the nearest roundabout is in like 3 kilometers, I think.
Wow, that's amazing.
The nearest traffic light is in like 5.
So the nearest like real intersection is 3 kilometers away. Beyond that, everybody just sort of like waves and says, "Okay, you go first, not me." Or there's probably not enough traffic to really warrant an interaction at an intersection, right?
No, I don't think there's. Yeah, no. There's not enough traffic. But the downside of this is I live right next to the highway. So if you hear cars, it's the highway.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no worries. We'll just edit that out. Well, welcome to the podcast, Sarah. Thank you so much for agreeing graciously to be our guest. I have to be honest, I've been looking forward to this episode for quite some time now. I think we scheduled this one about a month ago.
Yeah.
You and I ended up chatting about like crappy movies or something for the next like 20 minutes after we...
I always keep forcing people to watch really, really bad movies.
So tell us, have you seen any really bad movies recently?
Yes, let me think about the name. Oh, I've watched Tremors 2, which was a an experience. Oh, and I've watched Truth or Dare, which is just bad.
Truth or Dare, huh?
Is this new?
Yeah, this is actually new, yeah. So it's about these kids, like, there's always this movie about a curse, and like it's usually fun because it's like a fun curse. I don't know what this means, but like it warrants some funness in the movie. But this one is just like, so there's a bunch of kids, they're playing Truth or Dare, and then they get stuck in this curse, and then every time someone says Truth or Dare, they have to either answer correctly or do the dare, otherwise they die. And it's like, who came up with this? What year is this? And how old am I?
Sounds kind of like a really bad version of Jumanji.
Oh,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like Jumanji, like, it warns a good curse. Like, it's fun to watch. And this one is just like kids playing Truth or Dare. You're like, who's the last guy you slept with? And like, oh my God, I can't tell you. And she dies.
She dies.
That's the movie.
What a thing to die over.
I didn't watch it till the end. I couldn't do it.
All you had to tell was the truth. That's all you had to do
exactly.
Is tell us the truth. So Sarah has been, back on topic, everybody. So Sarah has been conducting some awesome React workshops. You might have seen her give her React testing workshop in London or at React Finland. If you were there a couple of months ago, what was that? Maybe March you were doing that?
Yeah.
April time? Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sarah's been doing some React workshops across Europe. Tell us a little bit about what you do from day to day, Sarah. What is your current role?
Right now, my company. I used to work for. I used to be like a full stack developer. Now I currently got switched to being more of developer relations.
Got it.
So right now I am mostly doing conferences or doing some projects like the make front end shit again was not a project by the company. I was just very bored at a Reason hackathon because I couldn't install Reason on my computer. For some reason it didn't work.
So you're like, I'm just going to make something else.
Yeah, I'm just going to make something else. That was literally it.
Did you still win, though? I mean, I feel like you should have won, even though it wasn't Reason.
There wasn't a prize, so I didn't even compete.
Oh, man.
No It wasn't a prize. Yeah, that was very sad. I was like, that's not a hackathon, man.
That's just like...
You have to fight for something.
That's just like forced labor, you know? Like, hopefully these developers child will labor. Come up with something cool and then we can steal it. So cool. So you're working on... You said you're working on a lot of back-end stuff these days, or is it totally full stack, a lot of front-end stuff as well?
No, it's mostly front-end stuff. Okay. So the last project that I was in also included doing like a GraphQL server to communicate with some weird SDK.
Nice.
It was really an API, but I don't think people know what SDK means. And but mostly I just do front-end.
Got it. Okay.
I do like building APIs and stuff, but it's mostly front-end.
Got it. Okay, yeah, cause you had mentioned in when we chatted that you're doing that you were doing some stuff with GraphQL. So I was thinking, oh, maybe she's doing some stuff on the back end too. Okay, cool. So what kinds of things then have you been building with React? For example, this API that you built, what was that all about?
Oh, so it's actually fine because the project is open source. So it was the last project that I was in actually working as a like full stack developer at the company. We were working for Joyent, mm-hmm. the cloud computing thing that made Node thing mm-hmm. and all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really coding back then. I didn't know who they were, mm-hmm. but yeah. What they did was wanted to like do their new portal, and so we made this GraphQL server that communicated with their API instead of dealing with their API.
Okay.
So in order to just get some stuff, and and all the front end was GraphQL, and all the state management at the end was also GraphQL. It was just like GQL, all the things, everything was GQL'd.
Interesting.
And everything was styled components as well. It was a really cool project. I think it still is.
I take it you were using Apollo because you mentioned the Apollo Slack earlier. Were you using the Apollo for all the state management and stuff on the front end?
At the beginning we were using Redux. Then we changed to Apollo. And I've actually never used Relay in my life. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if it's actually better, worse, just different, mm-hmm. interesting. Mm-hmm. No idea. I've only used Apollo. I've had problems with Apollo, but that's mainly because we're not very, we think we're very smart as developers, but we're not.
We aren't. And it's so sad.
We're not.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. I had such a battle in the last 2 days to get server-side React to work.
Ooh.
It's a pain. If you scroll through my commits, it's the funniest thing ever.
Maybe this will work. No, maybe this time. No.
No, there's one like try again, and then there's I think the best one was actually posted on Twitter, and it's basically like work in progress, move to SSR, and there's 24 commits.
Ooh. Ooh.
There's one that says like push through, girl, you can do this. Oh, and there fix local storage, and then just like move Apollo, fix local storage. There's one that just says holy fuck in capital letters. I have no idea what I did in here. And then it was like add helmet, React helmet, and then it's like Apollo is being a bitch. And then the next one is like 10 minutes later and it's like, so Apollo is not dumb, I am. Yeah.
It's like a real-time commentary on your own work.
Yeah, there's the push through, and the next one is like so close.
isn't that kind of like typical though of like the software development cycle? I mean, there's like the initial sort of joy of like, I am going to create something new here. This will be fun. Oh, hey, I get to use some shiny new tech. That looks cool. Install, try to use it. You get some sort of initial results, right, that are encouraging. You're like, oh, that's kind of neat. You run into like a problem, and then you like hop into the chat room and you kind of ask around a few people. Maybe somebody makes like, you know, some comment and you're like, it kind of confuses you. Fast forward a couple hours later, you're kind of like swearing at your computer. you're like, I just need some time to think. Maybe like somebody who you love very much comes into the room and you start yelling at them because you're like just blowing some steam. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I found out I was missing a comma on line 10 and everything works.
Yeah, and then you feel like the smartest, you totally swing the other way and you feel like the smartest person who ever lived.
Exactly.
And then you apologize to that person who you offended. Oh, I'm so sorry. It was just a comma that was missing on line 10. Everything's good. Now we're friends again.
I'm sorry, Apollo.
So Sarah, mentioned that you weren't programming back in the kind of Joyent Node early days. What is your history with programming? How did you get into it? Kind of what were some of your first technologies, and how did you end up coming to React, GraphQL, all of those things?
How did I become cool in technology?
How did you become cool in technology?
Thanks. I was totally fishing for compliments, but it totally worked. So I started work. I went to college. You can't see me, but I'm quoting because it's like this weird ass thing. It doesn't really count as college. It doesn't matter. And then I got a job in an agency. So I was doing PHP and WordPress. So like every good front end developer, I started with WordPress. And I'm just gonna check when that was. That was in 2014.
Okay.
Apparently. Then I started working more on the front end, which basically jQuery and stuff. And back when Angular 1 was cool, I changed projects. I'm like, I'm going to learn Angular. It's Angular is just dope. And then I cried. And
I'm curious. I had kind of a similar trajectory. So I'm curious, like, at what point in your Angular journey did you start realizing that this was sad for you?
I think the most horrible thing was that, like, I was in this project, and the part that that I was assigned to was payments and registration.
Mm-hmm.
Registration, mm-hmm. It was like the good thing that Angular had supposedly was the forms. We had so many timeouts.
Oh,
so many timeouts because of the digesting of the scope.
Yeah,
I remember that. Uh-huh. I once did a PR which had a timeout of 13 milliseconds, and the other person in my team was just like, why 13? And I was like, that's the first one that worked. And she was like, okay.
That's
and
the
she
magic
merged
number.
It. And that was it.
Oh, gosh.
The first file, I don't actually remember the name, but the file that we had to do to start everything, that I had to import all the things and then start them. Like, this model is this model. Like, the name.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
I don't remember. Yeah, the huge file. Because we are also using require.js. Mm-hmm. So it was like a huge require.js file. And it had so many comments of stuff like, I know this sounds dumb, but please don't touch it. And yeah. I just remember one comment that I never forgot was this guy was like, init data equals data. And then on top, it was like, just a comment saying, sorry. That was it. It was broken. We broke him.
Isn't it kind of amazing, though, how far things have come in like just six... I mean, no, that was, 2014? That was only like four and a half years ago.
Yeah, I started. I started Angular in about 2016.
Oh man, it's so crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I have my LinkedIn open. Otherwise, I don't remember this kind of stuff.
you know, it's interesting. I saw a tweet earlier today from the React account, from the React Twitter account, and they said their Twitter is 5 years old today.
Crazy.
Today is the 5 year anniversary of when when React was introduced to the world, and I saw a tweet from my friend Ryan Florence who said, you know, I was so bummed out on development around 2015 that I was literally about to, or sorry, no, it was earlier than that, 2013. He said, I was so bummed out at that time that I was going to quit. I was going to quit development and I was going to do something else. And I echoed that sentiment. I was like, Ryan, because Ryan and I have done a lot of work together with React. And I said, you know, I felt the exact same way. I seriously felt in 2013, 2014-ish, I had recently tried doing a project with another framework. It wasn't Angular. And I want to avoid mentioning it here, so to avoid starting a flame war. Hey, shh.
There's
say
no
anything.
Other frameworks. It was either Angular.
What else was it, Michael? Come on.
It was
Angular. I was unsuccessful with
CanJS. Was it CanJS? Come on, we know it's Ember.
Just admit it.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and it was Ember. And I just couldn't do it. I could not finish the app. And for me at the time, I had actually put like 18 months into this project. I invested like a whole year's worth of my salary, you know, that I had saved up to like work on this startup. I was trying as hard as I could to make this app and to ship it. And I just couldn't get the level of of polish on the functionality, on the features that we wanted to. And we had scaled way back on the features and everything. It wasn't a problem of feature creep. It was just a problem of I can't finish this thing. I was like it and I hit the I got to this kind of deep dark place where I was like, maybe I'm just not that smart. Yeah. Like maybe I'm just not a good developer. Maybe I'm not a developer. Maybe I'm a salesperson who got tricked into writing code. You know, like maybe I should be working in HR or like marketing or some other thing, not writing code. And then React came out and I was like, oh, I was just not using the right tools.
Well, I mean, the right tools, I think, didn't exist, at least for the way that we think about the web, I think. And we had a similar thing where we had all these Rails apps and we had... the company that I joined had just put out a kind of single page application, like the first one. And it just became unmaintainable. Like no one had any idea what it was doing. Like all of those, like, I mean, the same like set timeouts for like 13 milliseconds. Like why? Nobody knows. Yeah. It just works now. And we had kind of come to that same thing. We're like, you know what? Screw it. Like we're just going to build Rails apps again, because like that was the last time these things worked, is like when we had a fresh request response, like anytime anybody did anything. And I love that React kind of modeled that, like the mental model for React kind of coming into it from the other things was just like, hey, this is almost like what you're used to. Like you do something and the whole thing, like just think that the whole thing re-rendered as if you got like a new page. And that was transformative for me.
I think it was also the thing of it made sense. The way you structured things and the way you made things, it just made sense.
Yeah.
Like I think in the problem with Angular 1 or whatever it is that you were using is that you had to learn JavaScript and then you had to learn Angular.
Yeah.
And then you had to piece those two things together and then you were like, okay, I got this. But then you didn't. And it was pain again. And when React came, it was like, oh, so I want to make a header, so I make a header component. Wait, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Everything is on this file. Oh, okay. Why did no one think about this earlier? It's the thing about React. It sounds like such a simple concept, but it's so powerful. The component idea is so powerful because it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And I want to riff on something that you said, Michael, with the... the Rails kind of request response cycle. Because I think in those components that Sarah's talking about, you have kind of a miniature request response cycle going on all the time with a set state and render. Set state is like your request. Yep. And then the response is like, well, what do I render now? What do I render in response to the set state that just happened? Mm-hmm. So that's awesome. So it's cool. So you feel like React has been obviously a huge departure from what you had before. And you don't have so many like what's going on timeouts and set timeouts and things in your code now.
I don't remember.
I take it
the last time I've used a set timeout, and if I did, I probably deleted it afterwards. Because awesome. Like it was awesome. the Apollo thing. So Apollo's being a bitch. No, I'm dumb, not Apollo. Apollo's okay. I don't remember the last time I used a set timeout. Also because we don't deal with digests and weird stuff that doesn't actually belong in the DOM or in the virtual DOM.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the main issue. There's no weird cycles. That's it.
Yeah, so I never actually used Angular, so
I've only used Angular 1. I've never used Angular after that. So I'm only talking about Angular 1. I don't want to get punched in the face. That doesn't sound very nice.
So what was the first thing that you made, and how was like with React or GraphQL and what was it that felt like revelatory to you?
I think the main thing I actually started on the server.
Okay.
And made a small server in GraphQL.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, so this looks cool, but what does this do on the front end? Then I remember that I used GraphQL on the front end. It was something like extremely simple. I think I started actually like with creating something on GraphQL and just using it on the front end. Mm-hmm. And I think like the most amazing thing was there was no loadings. Mm. It was just the idea of having a set state of loading became dead to me. And now I look at stuff like get initial props and I'm like, I don't need this. I don't have a loading. It's amazing.
That's very interesting, Sarah, because that, as far as I can tell, is like one of the main goals of the async React work. I don't know if you've looked into or had time to sort of, you know, listen to any of the stuff that the, you know, that Dan has been saying or the, any of the other members of the React core team. He gave a talk about it at the React Iceland thing, and, you know, a couple of months ago.
We had our stand up at 10 and we pushed it to 10:30 to watch Dan's talk.
Yeah, totally. It's the new like Steve Jobs keynote, right?
Whenever, yeah, exactly. Whenever
the React team announces
so
something.
True.
When Dan goes give a talk, we're there.
But one of the interesting things, you know, that he talked about, or at least he might not have actually talked about it, or maybe this is just what I took away from it, is that, you know, there's this pattern that happens a lot in React code when you have requests mixed into the cycle, when you have data loading or I/O going on. In your React components is that you've got like this loading flag, this loading state, yeah. and you're showing a spinner and now you're not, you have the data. And I think that's part of kind of what they're trying to address with, you know, the async sort of fetchers in your render methods. And now I'm hearing you saying that, hey, you know, when I was building this GraphQL app, or, you know, when I was using GraphQL, that all of that stuff was just dead to me. I didn't have any of that, you know, loading state anymore.
I think it's one of those most common issues that we have. I remember that when I started using React, we used it with Redux, and we had so many actions that was just like set loading. Mm-hmm. And also, like, the loading isn't always in the same place, which actually becomes a problem, because then you have to create several loading actions that are slightly different because they set loading in slightly different places, kinda, and are slightly different loadings. And this is something that I think with async and with GraphQL, it's pretty much dead. I have, for this thing that I'm building right now, I have one query component that has a loading and just returns the children as a function. So basically what the query component from React Apollo does, but it's just wrapped so that the loading is always the same. Mm-hmm. I did one loading and that was it. And so the fact that a single page app that has several pages with different stuff, with mutations and queries and everything, only has one loading is kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm. So you have one component that's doing all of the fetching of the data and everything?
So I have like, so there's like the query component from React Apollo. I just have my own query component, basically.
Yep.
And
yep.
It just does like, if floating, return the loading. If error, return the error. If none of these things happen, render the children with the data. Mm-hmm. So all I get is the data, basically. So every time I call that component instead of the React Apollo one, I just get the data. It's so good.
Got it.
It also works for local stuff, so it's so good.
So, around just kind of FYI, Sarah, around here we call children as a function, we call them render props.
Sorry.
No, I'm just teasing.
The thing is, I don't like the term render props mainly because they're
hold on. I wanna hear you what you have to say about this, because I've heard some grievances from a bunch of people. There was a guy on Twitter just the other day who was like, yeah, the term render props sucks. Okay. So here I am, hold on, I have to get ready. Okay, I'm ready.
I get very confused by render props because people say render props and then it's a render a prop. And sometimes people say render props and it's children returned as a function. And I always have to click links to know what they're talking about. And it's just like,
I would like to hear your defense on this, Michael.
Well, what I want to understand is her confusion, is it that you think... are you wondering if the prop is named render?
No, there's a lot of people that use render props, and basically what they do with render props is create a prop named render that renders a component, and then they just call star props.render as a function.
Yeah, it's an inversion of control. They're just saying like, hey, delegate render to whatever I give you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I usually use it as calling children with the function. So I don't know anymore, Michael.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's a totally legit concern. I think the name render props is, people think it's a prop named render, but it's not. You can name the prop whatever you want, right? It's just a prop that you use to render stuff. But it's not a prop named render necessarily, right? So the prop could be named children, but I just couldn't deal with like because there was like children as a function, then in function as child component. I was recently at a training because I run these React workshops, and there was this guy who was like, we call it function as child element.
Oh, wow.
Face.
What? Wow.
Face.
No, they stretched
it. More than one element.
Yeah. I mean, they made it into an actual word.
Face.
But like, what if you have three elements? Is it function as a rendered element?
Well, the
factory.
Function as a fragment.
The one that I was not a fan of was the function as child component. Because if you abbreviate that, it's just F-A-C-C, or like, fuck. and it's like, our code is like already hard enough to like reason about without people throwing that one around, right?
You know what? So like, I think that's it, though. That's it for me. That's what I'm going to call from now on.
Fuck.
I mean, that's the sound I make when I'm coding anyway.
Why don't you use a fuck in there and you'll fix that component right up. A what?
This is my fuck component.
What do you want me to use?
You sit down to pair with someone and you're like, what fuck. Do you want? Oh, no. That's just what I recommend. I recommend you use a fuck.
What do you want me to do to my code? What are you talking about? That's terrible. Don't say
fuck
that.
Fuck up that code.
It's terrible. That's just, I was just trying to save us all from that. Okay, so render props, RP, there's no weird sort of thing.
Okay, so I have this query component that has render props.
Got it. No, that's okay? That is a valid critique of render props. We will take that into, I will consult you the next time before I decide on a name for something.
You know what though, it's like all things, like the stickiest names are rarely the most accurate. Like true. Stateless functional components. I think they're still called functional components, which like drives me crazy. Yeah. Like the whole functional, like I can't read that and not think like this thing works. It's functional.
I think probably one of the best names I've ever seen is create React app. It's like,
that's exactly what it tells you to do.
I mean, and it's totally Googleable, right? You can just Google, how do I create a React app? I guarantee you that's the first thing you're going to find.
Or like Kent Dodd's new testing thing, React testing library.
Yeah. This is just.
We got to go simple on things, but we try to screw them up.
Like, who puts the word library in their NPM package name? Like that's like me saying, like, this is the React router package. Like it's obviously a package. It's on NPM. Like, why are you? Anyways.
Inception.
Yeah, it was genius, though. It was genius. Because now you Google for, I need a library for testing React. Oh, there it is, there right it is. There. Boom.
There's the one.
Got Google juice for days.
Yep, there we go. So we got testing React apps, and then one from Free Code Camp, and then Kenzie Dodd's React testing library.
So you've actually done quite a bit with testing yourself, Sarah. You did a couple of testing workshops in React. Is that something that you've been that you've kind of specialized in, or that you've really kind of been passionate about?
The thing is, I didn't really do a lot of tests back when I was doing Angular, and then I think somehow the same thing happened in React, and I was like, oh, okay, so this makes sense. Mm-hmm. I can just like get the elements and there's no weird stuff. So I've been also because I've never been one of those people that does TDD or anything. I'm always the person who was like, oh shit, I forgot to do tests.
That's 99% of developers. That's all of us.
Yeah. I know, but people lie about it and I ain't taking that bullshit. Okay. I'm that person. It's fine if you're that person. Okay. It's like Google Analytics. You're like, oh, look at this. I released this. And then 10 minutes later, like, shit, I forgot to put Google Analytics on that. Yeah. You're like, how many people are using it?
You missed all of those people who clicked through on the announcement post.
I have no idea. 10? 10,000? One in between?
So what inspired you then to start teaching people how to test?
Because the thing is, testing wasn't fun. And like, I think that with React, testing is never fun. Okay.
No. Yeah.
Just don't come to me with that. There's no like actual result of that. I mean, just kind of helps with the green stuff and you're like, yay, green. But yeah. So I wanted to be like, okay, I know you don't like this. No one does. It's fine. Okay. But I want to teach you some ways that you can do this where you're not going to cry.
So what are your high levels then? What can people take away from, you know, if people aren't testing their code right now, what are like three things they should know to make it more fun? Not crying
is important. Okay, so I think the first thing is I find it very very much easier. much fun. Yes.
Yeah.
Whoa.
No, I know. I know.
Much
English,
fun.
English is hard. Okay, so I find
it is. It's a dumb language.
There are a lot of words that mean the same thing, but then really don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So one thing that I've taken away from like doing React for a couple of time, not as much as Michael or Ryan or anything, but for a couple of time, is that I find it a lot easier to manage components if they're just like stateless components.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're much, much easier to manage. So one of the things that I usually say is just like try to go with stateless components when you can. It's not that I think that state is bad. State is not bad at all. I made entire apps using just set state. Mm-hmm. I don't get the hate on set state. Dude, it's good. Chill. Like, it's not a bad thing.
Set state's totally. Great.
Set state's great. I love it.
Love it.
But, like, to test, it's much easier to test, like, these functional components. Sorry. Sorry, Michael.
No, it's fine.
These stateless components that I'm trying, man. You gotta give me a coin for trying. I just get props and render something, and you can just change the props. The best thing that I try to teach people is, like, if you send it like nothing, what happens? They're like, oh, it breaks. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Look at your page that has nothing. It's like it's one of those jokes where I once heard a joke. It's like a QA tester goes into a bar and orders three drinks, minus 99.99 drinks and non-drinks. Yeah, that's the, I think testing all of the props that you get in all different ways and just, the rest of it, you can usually just test, like, you have pure functions in your React app. Like, mm-hmm. you can't just do everything with React. Mm-hmm. You need to, like, install packages and have functions that just, like, even mm-hmm. if you just trim something.
Sure,
just
yep.
test, mm-hmm. yeah. Just test those functions separately. Don't need any React stuff. And then just do some prop testing and check out if the elements that you think exist. Mm-hmm. And check out that if you don't pass some conditions, that it actually doesn't break, because I've realized so many apps that, so many stuff that I've done, I was like, oh, what if I pass it an empty array? Oh, shit, my app's gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I gotta fix this. it's the dreaded, you gotta search for length first before you map, and always search for length, by the way. And I think that's the main takeaway that I can give, is try and, like, make everything not, like, try and make stuff stateless.
Mm.
Just, like, make one component that is stateful, and then it just passes stuff to the other components that are all mm-hmm. stateless. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. it will be much easier to test the other ones, and then you just have one giant one to test. So mm-hmm. it's just one. It yep. looks easier. Does that make any sense?
I totally agree. I think that one of the biggest problems is people don't, like, they don't have enough tolerance for having, like, a gigantic smart component at the top of their app with, like, a mm-hmm. bunch of tiny little you know, I don't know, dumb or stateless or whatever you want to call them, the ones that mm-hmm. are just functions. And, you know, everyone wants to, like, break up that state into, like, a bunch of different places. But I totally agree with you. Like, there's something so liberating about having, like, just one smart component and just a bunch of things that are just functions, basically.
So in this app that I'm building, I have, like, what? Like, if I search for components, maybe nothing happens. I have, like, three components that actually are components. Like, extends from component from React. The rest is just all, like, stateless. Got it. Nailed it. Stateless stateless components. That's it.
So in fact, this is actually how I actually recommend building a lot of apps to people for the very first time. Because I think that when you're starting to build an app, it's not obvious, like, what state you're even going to need, or where that state even needs to live. And so lots of times what I do when I'm starting on an app from scratch is I will just build out the views as just these stateless functional components, or just functional components or whatever.
No, both. They're stateless okay. and functional.
We need, Michael, you need to name this one.
Well, okay, so you're the one who got me thinking about that, is because you were like, well, yeah, they're stateless, but really they're life cyclelessness.
Mm-hmm. Life cycle-less components.
Yeah, that's the big thing right there.
Ain't got no life cycle.
You ain't got no life cycles.
Yeah.
Nobody got time for life cycles.
One of the more interesting things that I've seen in this space is, have you all seen, Ryan actually did something called React Component Component?
I don't think
that's,
so.
If I remember correctly, I think
look it up. It
basically delegates all of the internal methods as props, right?
Yeah. Yep. You nailed it. Yep. So all of the lifecycle. So it's like a component that has props called, and one of the props is called did update, and one of the props is called, you know, did mount, and one of the props is called will mount, right? And to these props, you just pass functions. So you could literally avoid ever extending React class.
Yeah.
And you just create components all the way down. So if you need the lifecycles, you just pass them as a prop to your component, and then you've got a lifecycle. And if you don't, then you don't, and not a big deal. Which is a really cool abstraction, because now, if you're developing now, you have to decide as a developer, which one do I need? Well, do I need state and the lifecycles? Okay, then yeah, I have to extend React Component. Otherwise, if I don't need state and the lifecycles, I can just use a pure function, right? And what this abstraction does, what React Component Component does, is it makes it so that you can just, like, you never have to make that decision ever again. If you just render one of those things, and then if you need the lifecycle, then you just pass some extra props. And if you don't need the lifecycle, then you don't.
Yeah, I really like that. I have like a similar one called, I think I called it like an inline component or something, experimenting in the same like space. But it is really nice. It is a bummer in terms of, like, I never ended up using it because of the documentation issue, right? Like, it's so hard working on a team, and they're like, what the heck is this thing? And like all of like nothing's Googleable in it.
I mean, I can imagine it would be hard to scale that approach on a team, but I think as like a somebody who writes library code a lot, I think it's I think it's interesting, you know. I think it's interesting that, like, you essentially take that decision of, oh, should this be a class or should this be a function, and that decision is gone. It's neither. It's just a component.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like one of the things that I end up doing very much, because I'm slightly lazy, is that every time I have to turn, like, crap, I need state. Every time I have to turn, like, a component into a stateful component.
Oh, gosh, the worst.
No, I'm just like, can I make some weird-ass hack which I don't have to do this work? And it's like two lines of work. That's it. But it's like, it's so frustrating to you, as like, you feel like you failed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, well, I should have known.
Yeah. God damn it.
It breaks up your flow a little bit, right? Yeah. You're like, now I got to go back and refactor this thing.
So I actually think I'm going to pop in this React component component. It sounds like a really good idea. I'll just add it as the readme. It's like, what is this weird thing? And then a link.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting, actually. I think there might be like, there might be some issues to sort out. So the main one, I think, would be in this abstraction. How do you decide? Normally you can, if you want to be pure, then you can extend pure component, which a lot of people like to do, because then they say, if I extend pure component, then I don't get re-rendered unnecessarily, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And that's important sometimes. And I don't see a really clear, easy way to do that with the React component component, because it makes heavy use of functional props, right? Like, every single prop essentially is a function, and you're generating those on every single render. So you have to find either some way to like memoize those functions, which you could totally do. But anyway, yeah, you lose the ability to be like a pure component, which, you know, in the long run may not be necessary, but anyway, it's an interesting experiment for now, for sure.
Yeah, I also think it's not something that you can just put on the top of your app. Well, I mean, you can. You can do whatever you want. Like, literally, it's React. You can do whatever you want. But I don't think it's something that you should put on the top of your app with, like, five states, different stuff. It's like something where you're like, oh, my God, I just need to set this one state. I'm going to have to change the entire component. It's like, oh, React component component.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I have a question. It's a topic change, but I'd be remiss not to bring it up. I think the first tweet I ever saw of yours, Sarah, was the destructured pony.
I still have a couple of those stickers. I ordered like 200 of those.
Oh my gosh. I need to find a way to get one from you because I love that so much. How did that come about?
So I went to this conference called JS Heroes. If you want to come to Europe, dude, you got to go to JS Heroes. That thing is amazing. Like, Romania is great. It's like Portugal, but with a different language. It's great. I love it. It's like home away from home where you can rent cars by the minute. It's great. So I went to this conference in JS Heroes, and they tweeted, like, we're looking for stickers. And I sent them, I don't really remember what I sent them, but it was something like super normal. I was like, oh, I'm going to make some stickers. And I sent them like this weird unicorn sticker. It was just a unicorn. And someone told something about deconstruction. I was like, I know what I can do. I know what I can do. That was pretty much it. Like, I have no design. I don't know what I'm doing.
It looks amazing. It's really the most beautiful example of destructuring assignment I've ever seen. I want docs to look like that. Like, they start with just a graphic that looks like that explains it better than, you know, 1,000 lines could.
I really want to get more stuff that is not Michael. Okay, cool. I also want to find more stuff that is not easily explainable and try to explain it like this, because I think it's an amazing way to actually learn.
Oh, I totally agree. I did kind of an experimental talk at a meetup one time, and it was just exploring React patterns like through a shape first kind of concept. You know, like if I was trying to explain it to like a 5-year-old, and it was a lot of fun, and it helped me understand it better. But like, a lot of people were like, "Oh, I never understood that thing," but now that I can like think of it as like a basketball hoop and a basketball, like, I totally get it now.
Yeah, but that depends on the people. Some people understand better by reading.
Totally.
If I see something, I understand. Like, the dumbest example that I can ever tell you is when I was like 10, and I've been really into football or soccer or, I don't know, the one with your feet. And I've always been into that for like, since I was a little kid, but I never really understood offsides. Like, it didn't make sense to me because there was still a goalkeeper. And I was like, this doesn't make any sense. And then I saw one image, it was like the defense, and then the guy was in front, but the goalkeeper was still back, and I was like, oh, why can't no one just show me this before?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I understood all about offsides. That was about it.
I love exploring the differences between, like, as a teacher, like, visual learning versus, I guess, just hearing something or... learning something by like doing, you know, learning something by like getting your hands on and doing it. Sometimes I'll be up in front and I'll be teaching something about like higher order components is always the one that throws people for a huge loop. They're like, wait a minute, a higher order component. And I'm like, and then I'll just throw up this picture of like something wrapping something else. Like, see this wrapper, this is the higher order component. This is your real component. And then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I get that, right? For a lot of visual learners, that helps to kind of see it like that. But yeah, that's kind of the tricky thing as a teacher, which we've all done, is like trying to figure out like how to communicate with people, right? And trying to speak to the way that they learn.
I think also one of the coolest things that you can try and do is try to teach stuff that is very technical to someone who's not technical at all. And make them try and understand. So I had this t-shirt like a week ago, and it says like, I gotta ask me about GraphQL t-shirt. And I have this friend who was like, what is GraphQL? And I'm like, oh God, no. And she was like, no, I want you to tell me. And I was like, but yeah, I know, but I don't wanna. And she's like, okay, just explain to me what GraphQL is. So I got a napkin and I got my phone, and I was like, so this, my phone is the front end and the napkin is the back end. And when you're like opening a website, imagine how you're opening YouTube and you just want the name of the video, it just sends you all of the napkin in your face, and you're just like, what the fuck is this? What GraphQL does is basically like, it breaks your napkin into pieces and just gives you like the part of the napkin that you want. And she was like, so that makes websites faster. And I was like, yes.
Oh, yeah. Nailed it.
She can immediately derive that piece just from that example, right?
She has no idea what it is, but in her head, it makes websites faster.
Yeah.
You get less stuff. So that's good.
And then we have like all these technical terms for that, right? Like overfetching and all this stuff. And it's like,
I didn't get into that.
Yeah.
No, like, and that's called overfetching. She's like, okay, yeah, now we're done.
Yeah,
I don't care. She's gonna get up. If you do this, no, do this. You don't need this. You don't need all comments in this post, okay? You just need name of post. Good, cool.
I agree. Those are my favorite like types of resources. The ones that are just they're just like good, bad, and then you know maybe they have a paragraph on why. And then you're like, okay, that's cool. It. Like, I can live with that. Like, that seems reasoned enough.
I think also the main issue that's going on is that, if I say something is bad, I mean, it's bad for me. It doesn't mean that it's actually bad. I don't know if it's bad. It didn't work for me.
Yeah.
And this way, like, I think I have so many problems with saying, like, this is bad. Because, like, for some people, it may work way better. But to me, I'm just like, why?
Yeah. You see that a lot with like, binding, binding event handlers and whatnot. Like everyone's like, oh, this is bad and this is good. And like, well, I mean,
no one cares.
Maybe.
It's like, do your thing, man.
Yeah.
Do your thing. Just do always the same thing. That's it. Like on one app, try to do always the same thing. If you change your mind between the app, refactor the rest. Because 3 months later, you're gonna be in. It's like, who made this? And you're gonna you're gonna get blame it. It's gonna be you.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be bad. That has happened to me, and it's not good.
There's a lot to be said for consistency, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't think it's any problem changing your mind. I think it's a problem when you're, like, halfway through a thing, and then you change your mind, and then everything else just looks one way, and then the rest looks another way. And then in 3 months, you're just like, oh, I guess I'm just going to delete this. Just going to burn it.
I hope no one sees this.
And then there's a pull request to fix your stuff. You're like, oh, my God, they saw it.
And then you realize, like, 6 months later, oh, wait. That was me. That was me 6 months ago. That's who made this.
Yep.
Yours truly.
Did it ever happen to anyone who was like working on a project and was looking at something? It was like something like, it may not have been bad, but it just looked horrible. It was like a huge hack. In this case, it was CSS. So it was just a bad thing of CSS. I think it had like importance and something like really weird upon it. And I was like, who the fuck in their right mind made this? I'm going to shame this human being to death. And then I get blamed it, and it was me. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go home now.
Never mind.
I should probably quit.
I should quit. Why did I do this? What is wrong with me?
Well, this is good. This feels like therapy.
We should probably wrap it up. We've been talking for almost an hour now, and people are going to start turning our podcast off if we don't wrap it up. So Sarah, tell us a little bit about what people can do to support you. What are you doing? Any cool, do you have any like workshops coming up or any open source projects that you're working on that you want to kind of draw attention to?
I'm doing workshops in Odessa and Ukraine. One of them is about style components and CSS in React and stuff like that. Nice. That's with a friend. And I'm also doing one on, I'm doing two in GraphQL in France, in Toulouse, and one in Kiev. So I'm trying to start doing some also GraphQL, like starting with GraphQL stuff, mainly because like a week ago I did this, I had this meetup here in Porto, and I didn't know what I was going to talk about, and I didn't want to make any slides. Because I'm lazy. So I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to live code for 30 minutes.
Nice.
And it's going to be great.
Yep.
And it actually didn't go as bad as I thought. So that was good. Because I didn't have to do any CSS. And so the idea was that I created a GraphQL server using Prisma. And then I created the front end of it using React Apollo and Apollo. Mm-hmm. And it took less than 30 minutes. So what I actually want to show people is like, it's not that hard.
Nice.
Because it gets to this thing where it's like only like the cool kids do it because it's so hard. It's actually way easier. It's so much easier. So just trying to get into heads of people that it's like it's not actually hard. Like anyone can do this. You just need someone to tell you that it's not hard and teach you some basis of this kind of stuff. So those are the three workshops that I have coming up. I think like one of them in Odessa is like $20 or something like that, and the other two are completely free. So awesome. If you're from Kiev or France in general, because you got good public transportation, so that's fine. and want to join, that would be great. I've also started this thing about tech talks. It's called Awesome Tech Talks Party.
Yeah, that was awesome, that website that you made. That was really cool.
I've been trying to like server-side render it for 2 days, Michael. That's what the comments are about. It's been pain. Because it has like React Router, Apollo install components, and all of that has to render server-side.
Ooh.
It's working now. So, yeah, that's a thing.
You're getting there.
Yeah. Actually, React Router wasn't a problem. It was mostly the other two. So you're off the hook.
Oh.
You're good. That was like just pop in one place, pop in the other place. Nice.
Static router. Static router.
At least Michael Jackson loves me.
Hey.
Exactly.
I was thinking about you when we designed that.
No, but that was actually like a very good implementation for just server rendering stuff. Like there's like no weird functions. For example, like
Thank
this
you.
Thing, so style components as an inject global thing. And I had it on the client.js. Mm-hmm. And apparently I can't put it on the client.js because it doesn't work. Because it doesn't get it from like the sheet that collects styles. And so I had to like just copy and paste it everywhere to try to figure out what I could use it that would render it. And it was like, yes, style components. Got
yes.
it.
Yes. Sometimes when you're doing that server-side rendering stuff, it's like, wait, should this code run on the client or does this code run on the server?
And then sometimes things that run on the client get a window is not defined, and you're like, what?
Oh, really?
But it is. Oh. But I mounted the component. Also, this had like lazy load, and that doesn't work anymore, so I'm adding actual pagination. So there's a lot of talks that actually need to be like revised to make sure that they're actually like cool and stuff. And that would be amazing if someone also wants to help with that. I can give them like Graph CMS access and they can just like add the description and stuff and just publish the talks. Because I've been trying to do the SSR thing because of mainly SEO and performance. And also I have like a couple of conferences. I'm going to the Netherlands. I love the Netherlands.
Oh, nice.
I know, right?
Nice.
It's so good. It's so peaceful. Okay. So that would be amazing. And yeah, that's I want to get this website into a really good state and then just trying to expand it to speakers. And like there's a thing that I made with Carl. I don't know how to say his last name, so I'm not going to butcher it. That was this huge list of really good speakers as well. Mm-hmm. And just try and merge all of that thing into there and just use different data from the same GraphQL server so that when you search for one thing or the other, you can easily find it. It's the naming thing. You're like, Awesome Tech Talks. There you go. Awesome Talk That Party.
Yeah, exactly.
The naming.
So you got a couple of upcoming workshops. You got the Awesome Talks dot party. Awesome Tech Talks dot party.
No, it's just the Awesome Talks dot party.
Awesome Talks dot party.
I didn't quite think about the name.
No, that's fine. Then you can put talks about stuff other than tech. It'll be awesome.
There is also a lot of like personal talks and stuff from TED and stuff that is actually just inspiring. It has nothing to do with tech.
Beautiful.
Which is, yeah, it's good.
So we will have links to all of that in the show notes. Last question, very last question, Sarah. Is there anybody who you want to give a shout out to or anybody who you think is doing awesome stuff in React that is not getting enough attention?
Look, I want to thank Jared Palmer from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah.
Because I created an issue on After.js and he walked me through doing the entire server-side rendering.
Oh, wow.
I know. And
what a guy. We've had him on the podcast before. He is a great guy.
He's a great guy. Like, Formic is amazing. I actually didn't have any questions about Formic. I just popped it in and it worked.
Nice.
And like, I was trying to use After.js and I was like, oh, but you don't need this. You can just use this and you have to change this. And he sent me like huge bits of code. Like, you have to do this in order to make it work.
Oh, wow.
Like, looking at my own code. So I really want to thank him because he saved my sanity in general.
Wow.
Like, that is amazing. Because I would be hitting my head against the wall for so many reasons. I'm kind of a noob in like creating my own server-side stuff. So please have Jared Palmer here. Formic is amazing. Razzle is amazing. After.js is pretty cool as well. And he's just a super nice guy. That was one of the nicest things. That was so nice.
Yeah, we had him on the show. He was like our second... I think he was in episode 2. He was our second guest.
How long ago was that?
Just a couple months ago. You haven't been listening to the React podcast, apparently, Sarah.
Sorry.
What is this something?
hang Am your I head in, out right
hang
now?
Your head in shame. Later? Like put your no, you're good. You're good. Hey, thank you. Excellent. Thank you so much for hanging with us today, Sarah, and for talking some React with us. Really enjoyed your perspective on just everything. Just, you know, getting started with code, moving to React from other frameworks, you know, testing and just the kind of the pragmatic approach. So thank you again so much for being with us today. And we will have links to all the stuff that you mentioned in the show notes. And we will see you all next week on the React podcast.